good, everybody? Welcome to the Gold Standard Podcast, part of the Niners Nation Podcast Network. I am Rob Stats Guerrera, and with me, as always, on a Thursday, Levin Black. Levin, Baker Mayfield was traded.
At least somebody was traded, I guess. I mean, it sort of kind of answers things. Like, some people want to pretend like there's still a possibility out there, but I think it pretty much slams the door on Jimmy.
We are going to discuss the future of the still 49ers quarterback on this show. There was an interesting tweet about him, and we'll get to a couple other odds and ends here as we are in prime dead time before training camp. If you are new to the show, this is where you get the hot takes, mostly from me, and the cold truth, mostly from the human wet blanket, Levin Black. We remind you, as always, please rate, review, and follow the Niners Nation Podcast Network. We always say, if you leave a review, we will read it on the show. I've said it for many, many shows now, and I do mean it. And we got this review from 49 Bob Forever. 5 stars. Thank you very much. Here is the review. I absolutely love the show as the subject. He says, you always claim that you will read every review on the show. So with that in mind, is it harder to toot or to tutor two tutors to toot? Keep up the good work. Love you all. Well, Bob, we do read all the reviews on the show, and there's the proof.
Is it harder to toot or for two tutors to toot?
Is it harder to toot or to tutor two tutors to toot? You know, tutor, T-U-T-O-R?
Yeah.
I don't think we need to really break it down.
Yeah, I'm not following the second one without being able to visually see it, but my wife can tell you it's not very hard for me to fart, so I think the first one probably wins it for me.
Okay, well, this is now my least favorite review of all time, but we do read them, so keep them coming. We do appreciate it. We're trying to get that star rating up. I don't know why it was down, but we are slowly climbing. We were at 4.3. Now we're at 4.4. So please keep the 5-star reviews coming. Let's get us up there back where we deserve. We are up there on Spotify. So thank you to everybody that's been reviewing us there. All right, let's get to the Jimmy Garoppolo trade. If you missed it because you actually have a life, the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, excuse me.
I was going to say what?
The Baker Mayfield trade. He was moved from the Browns to the Panthers for a 2024. Not this coming draft, but 2024 conditional 5th-round pick. It could move to a 4th-round pick if Baker plays at least 70% of the Panthers' offensive snaps. All three sides had to finesse the money a little bit. The Browns are going to pay about $10.5 million. The Panthers are going to pay around $5 million, and Baker trimmed about $3.5 million off his base salary. So everybody did something with the money. Thus, the trade happens. What was your first reaction when you saw this trade, Levin, when it comes to Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, we're f***ed. that's the truth. there's no getting around it like that. That's the exact thought that went through my head. There's no more suitors out there. And we'll get into more detail why there aren't really any more, because some people are throwing around the Browns, which... That was my second reaction was, you know, we're effed. And then, oh, wait, no, now the Browns make sense. And then when you actually look into it, it's like, no, that's not possible. Pretty much unless Jimmy goes, sure, I'll do a renegotiation where I take a $20 million pay cut.
It would be nuts if the Browns had to pay Deshaun Watson's salary, $10.5 million for Baker not to play there. Then whatever they would work out with Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't see that happening.
Well, this is the thing. So, yes, a player who is suspended, their base salary doesn't get paid and does not count against the cap. But the whole reason why the NFL was reportedly pissed at the Browns for the way they structured Deshaun Watson's contract, to the point that the Browns actually had to send it out there that, oh no, we didn't do that on purpose, was because his first year base salary is $1 million. And they did that assuming he would get suspended. So basically, Deshaun Watson's going to lose very little money if he is suspended for the first year. But what that also means is the Browns don't get a ton of cap relief. You know, if Deshaun Watson had a base salary of $15 million and got suspended for the entire year, the Browns would suddenly gain $15 million worth of cap space for this next season. They don't have that. They are literally going to get $1 million of cap space, if I've read the rules correctly, which I did actually look up today. So that doesn't mean that means they can't fit Jimmy in any way. The only way they could fit Jimmy under their cap is by getting Jimmy down to $5, $6 million if they move things around. You're not going to get Jimmy that low. And the key difference here that I want to point out is, yes, the Browns basically are paying $10.5 million to get a fifth-round pick, but they couldn't cut Baker and be free and clear. He still had a dead cap hit because he was still on a contract that had money left. Jimmy can be cut with almost no dead cap. And that's the key difference, that the Niners can save all that money. The Browns couldn't save very much money by cutting him.
Yeah, Baker's on the fifth-year option, which his salary was $18.86 million. So now the Panthers have two quarterbacks playing on the fifth-year option from the same draft, by the way. They have the first and third overall.
Let's go Rosen.
I know, right? Like, just add him to the team at this point. I don't know what the hell the Panthers are doing, but whatever. We will see Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold, whoever is starting for the Panthers this year. So that'll be fun. I mean, the only team that's left is Seattle. And at this point, like, I don't really care. I would love it if Jimmy Garoppolo went to Seattle, because we'll kick the hell out of him twice a year. That'll be great. Like, I'm not worried about it at all. I wouldn't have any mixed feelings. It'd be just fine with me. But honestly, Levin, I don't really care if Garoppolo is traded. I just want him off the team. Whether they trade him or they release him, at this point, I'm more concerned with turning the page to Trey Lance than I am about Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, I'm done worrying about Jimmy Garoppolo. I have used all the energy I am physically capable of using on Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't have anything left.
That's a lie, because you're going to be talking about Jimmy plenty, because you have no choice. But if you're Seattle, why would you give a draft pick and bail the Niners out? And if you're Seattle, I think there's a legitimate question on whether Geno Smith, who knows the system, has been there, is a better option than Jimmy coming in last minute and trying to pick things up. Now, obviously, they have Drew Lock as well. Who knows who ends up starting there, but I think that's a legitimate question. Is Jimmy better than either of those?
Yes, he's
in the situation that they're in.
He's better than Geno Smith. Just because Geno Smith wasn't a tire fire last year, people will be like, oh, Geno Smith wasn't bad. He stinks, all right? Forget that. And why would Seattle give up a draft pick? Because they've got a ton of them now after the Russell Wilson trade. They can give up.
Yeah, but why bail them out? They know they're the only team left. Why would you bail out your rival? Just
because they
make them cut him and then go after him.
Otherwise, you have to compete for him. Maybe Pittsburgh goes after
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Do you
think they care?
He's cut.
They got no delusions of winning anything this year. They are rebuilding. Do you think they care? Do you really think they're going to go into the rebuild that they're in right now and hitch their wagon to Jimmy Garoppolo for both this next year and the future if he's a free agent? Because Jimmy's not going to sign a 1-year contract. I seriously doubt that. He's going to be looking for a multiple-year deal. I don't see Jimmy going to Seattle and trying to play with a dumpster fire to earn his way to another contract. If he goes to Seattle, it's because Seattle ponied up multiple years worth of money.
If Jimmy is cut, if I were him, I could see his agent saying, look, go to Seattle for a year, throw the ball to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett for a year. No one's going to expect anything out of you. You can put up some numbers and then you hit the open market. And who knows how many jobs are going to be open at that point. I mean, how many quarterbacks change teams every single year? If I were Jimmy Garoppolo, I wouldn't want to get locked into a deal. I'd want to hit the open market, have my choice, and let's go. Let's see. I think Jimmy could do a lot worse than Seattle, especially, you know, hitting the market at this point in the offseason. We're literally less than 3 weeks from the start of training camp. If I were him, that's what I would want to do. I don't know. But other than that, I really don't see another spot for him. So I don't want to say it yet officially, because I'm leaving the door open, because technically the situation is not resolved. But barring a trade, Levin, I think it's pretty clear The 49ers botched their Jimmy Garoppolo exit strategy.
You don't have to wait on that. We know that. They botched it. Because I guarantee at some point in the past year, they have had an offer on the table for an actual draft pick. They have had an offer where somebody offered an actual draft pick. And guess what? That's more than what they're going to get. They botched it. Now, how high of a draft pick? I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if last year's draft, not the one that just happened, but last year after they took Trey Lance, if they didn't get phone calls in the fourth round minimum, like I could see third round even, with a team kicking the tires that didn't get the quarterback they wanted in, say, the second round or third round, going, hey, would you take this draft pick for Jimmy? I just don't see how no team has ever offered a draft pick. And if there was ever a draft pick on the board, even if it was a seventh round pick, it means they botched it.
I will never get over the people, and I'm going to call out Akash, our own Akash Anavarathan here, because someone on Twitter criticized the Niners for essentially carrying Jimmy this year and not having the $18.5 million that they would have got if they had cut him before free agency. And Akash tweeted, one, salary cap space rolls over into 2023 if unused. Two, that space was likely earmarked for extensions for Debo and Bosa. And three, there was other ways to clear salary if they wanted to sign another player. Not sure why we keep rehashing the same thing. And I'm sorry, like that, I don't get that. That doesn't hold any water for me. Number one, I don't care about 2023 right now in the cap space. Number two, they don't have an extension for Samuel or Nick Bosa. So who cares what the salary was earmarked for? And number three, yes, there were other ways to clear salary, but none were as easy as just cutting this guy that you don't want anymore. And I'm sorry, in a salary cap league, you will never be able to get me to swallow this idea that, oh, an extra $18.5 million wouldn't have helped the team at all, that there was nobody in free agency that they could sign that would make the team better this year, so it doesn't matter that they just had one hand tied behind their back the whole time. I will never agree to that.
The point that bothers me on that is if they wanted to do the other ways to sign people, they would have. The whole point is they deemed not messing with certain people's contracts or cutting other people to get whoever they may have been able to sign as being worthwhile. So you can't sit here in retrospect saying, well, they could have done other things if they wanted to. No, we know that they didn't want to. So why is that suddenly an option? That's not an option. They didn't want to. That doesn't mean that there isn't somebody out there that they would have been willing to sign if Jimmy had been moved already and they were unable to sign. We don't know. But I mean, you can't tell me that there's nobody out there that they put an offer in for, and the person said, I need a little bit more money, and they go, we can't afford it. Like, there's somebody out there that they would have signed. And there's the whole thing that if they had moved him last year, they would have been able to roll over last year's money of Jimmy Garoppolo to this year. So if they traded him after the draft, found a trade partner that Jimmy signed off on prior to last season, it wasn't $18.5 million. You're pushing $40 million. That they would have had, because they could have rolled over the money last year into this year.
I fully admit that this may because I'm scarred by my Seattle Mariners fandom and their 20 plus straight years of not making the playoffs in Major League Baseball, but I don't give a shit about cap space for next year. You know how tired I am about hearing about flexibility for some future year? Like, no, I don't care. Kyle Shanahan said it, right? I don't know who's going to be alive on Sunday. I don't know what the hell is going to happen a year from now. I don't care about that. This team's in a Super Bowl window right now. Now is the time where you take that extra $20 million and you throw it at some people and you overpay some people and you load up the team to make it as easy as possible for your young quarterback to succeed early in his NFL career. Like, don't talk to me about 2023. I don't want to hear it.
Let me make this point now. If Jimmy Garoppolo is not released the day that he is medically cleared, and thus that $7 million injury guarantee is gone, Jed York needs to be doing it. I don't know if anybody's standing in the way. I would not be shocked if Kyle is standing in the way saying, I'm not releasing a quality player who might help me. What if Trey Lance gets hurt? Because I don't think Kyle eliminates the emotion a whole lot when it comes to personnel. He wants the best team possible going into the season. He doesn't care. You know what I mean? So, yeah, are the 49ers better with Jimmy staying on the roster as a backup if you take the money out of it completely? Yeah, they're better on paper that way. Now, you can argue the whole mental aspect of Trey Lance needing to be the true leader and all that, but I wouldn't be shocked if Kyle doesn't want to just release him and he would rather keep him on the roster than release him to guarantee that if Trey Lance goes down for some reason, they can still compete. And if that is the case, John Lynch should be saying too bad and releasing them. And if he doesn't have the power to do that, Jed York should be there saying, Kyle, you go coach. We're releasing him. Because there is zero way Jimmy can be on this roster starting in training camp. If he is still on this roster, I am going to be calling for everybody involved being the dumbest decision I've seen in my time as a Niner fan, because that would just be incredibly dumb. And the backlash that would cause and the training camp stories, because you still have national media people out there going, what if Jimmy starts? No, shut the hell up. Like, I saw you respond to one of them the other day. I'm not going to name names, but
Kyle Brandt, I'll name him.
I saw you respond to that, and it's like, dude, I understand you need viewers, but just shut the hell up. We've had enough of it. It's dead. You are beating the dead horse. Just shut up. We know he's not going to be here. If by some miracle Kyle digs in and says, I'm not releasing him, and throws a pitch fit if Jed tries to release him, and so Jimmy somehow stays on roster, there's going to be massive fan backlash over that, I think.
What is a pitch fit?
I don't know.
It's like, I don't know. It's like, is that a real thing? Did you just try and stop yourself from swearing? Like,
probably it's probably a thing where I eliminated pitch a fit and said pitch fit.
Pitch, I kind of like it. It sounds good, especially if you say it with like, oh, you're going to throw a pitch fit. It's good. I think I might have to incorporate that. So thank you very much for that.
I'm here for some reason.
Yeah, no, look, name names, man. You know me. I don't care. Like, if I wouldn't say it to somebody's face, I'm not going to say it on the air and I'm not going to tweet it. So I have no problem naming names. What Kyle Brandt said was stupid. He said that, you know, when Mahomes was with Kansas City his first year, you heard all these stories about all these no-look passes and great things he's doing at practice.
No, you
didn't. And Kyle Brandt said, I don't hear any of that with Trey Lance, which just goes to show he's not paying attention to anything happening with the 49ers because Fred Warner was talking about Trey Lance last year during the season, unsolicited.
No, that's one of those hindsight things. Because, look, we, as Niner fans, I would assume most Niner fans were like me. I paid a little extra close attention to Kansas City because Alex Smith was their starter. You know, I had a little extra interest there. Was I following them like I follow the 49ers? Heck no. Did I hear anything about Patrick Mahomes shining in practice and those no-look passes? No. Once he took over and started that final game and did well in it, I heard that in the off season that, oh, he was doing these things in practice, in retrospect, after he had already taken over. So I think that is changing what actually happened. We didn't hear that during Mahomes' rookie year. Now, if you paid extra close attention to Kansas City, like we do the 49ers, you might have heard some things, just like we've heard some things about Trey Lance. But I think the people at large, the general fan, didn't hear those things. The general fan doesn't hear about things in practice outside of training camp. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's just kind of rewriting history, trying to say that.
There was one thing that I heard, and the only reason I heard it is because we had Travis Kelce on the show that I produced, Pro Football Talk Live, in 2017, and he did say that Mahomes was doing unbelievable things in practice. But I'm going to be honest, not many people saw or heard about that interview, so most people probably don't know that, but that's literally the only one. But okay, that's fine. Fred Warner said Trey Lance was dicing him up. So, you know, there's your... I got a comment from a defensive guy saying that. So, like, it's... just the whole thing. I continue to say it no matter what show I'm on. The national people do not cover teams the way we do. There is nobody out there that covers the 49ers better than us here at Niners Nation. National, local, I promise you. And I say that as somebody that has done it from a national perspective and is now doing it, you know, from a more local situation, even though I'm in Connecticut. Trust me, nobody covers it better than the 49ers. Do not trust these people just because they have this big platform and think that, oh, they must be better informed than other people. No, that is not the case. And that was an example of it. I didn't mean to call out Kyle Brandt specifically. I would have grabbed the video of anybody that had said it. And it was just especially funny because Peter Schrager, who works for NFL Network and is on the show that Kyle Brandt is on, went on the Pat McAfee show and said Trey Lance was doing great things at practice and they love him. So it was just twice as funny.
Should I put you on the spot and ask if your former employer, ESPN, told people to say certain things that they didn't always get to state their true opinion? They were told to pick you have this side, you have that side, make your argument?
That never happened. That never happened. Nothing even remotely close to that ever happened while I was there. Like, that just... No, they didn't know what we were going to say when we went on the show. And we would have pre-show meetings and post-show meetings, and we never talked about that. I know that some people think that that's how it works. And maybe they changed since I left in 2012. I have no idea. But when I was there, no one ever told us what to say. No one ever told us what not to say.
Fair enough.
All right, let's move on from the Jimmy Garoppolo. Well,
are you sure you don't want to talk about Jimmy more?
There is one more thing I wanted to get to because I saw a tweet today. And this honestly kind of is more about Kyle Shanahan in my mind. The tweet is from at PFF Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. And it was a chart, a graph. And on one axis, the x-axis was perfectly covered dropbacks against. And on the vertical axis, it was contested targets for. And he has every team mapped out on the graph. And the amazing thing that jumped out to me is all the way at the left, Levin, are the 49ers, who had 20% contested targets around there, but perfectly covered dropbacks against, they were at like less than 10%, by far the best in the league, which just goes to show to me that Kyle Shanahan is a freaking wizard and gets somebody open, at least one person open every play.
Yeah, and it also shows that Jimmy, who I think was fifth or sixth highest percent of contested throws. So if you put two to two together, you have a team that there's always somebody open every single play, and yet you have a quarterback that is amongst the worst in the league at throwing into tight coverage. What's that tell you? Jimmy can't get through his progressions quick enough. That's what it tells you. Or he's unwilling to throw to the open guy because he's on the outside. He is forcing the ball at a high rate into coverage when there's somebody open. That's what that graph means. Jimmy is forcing it into coverage when somebody else on that field is open and he didn't find him or was unwilling to make the throw.
Those were my first two thoughts too, that number one, the person that's open is just a throw that Jimmy can't make, or number two, he's just jamming it in there unnecessarily. Just throw the ball away, dude. He almost never threw the ball away, which is always stunning for me. I just live to play another down. It was amazing. For a guy with limited physical ability, he had this like unwarranted confidence in himself to just wing it over the middle. When I see stuff like that, it gets me excited for Trey. Because if Kyle's going to get guys open like that, you would hope that, and Lance was drafted to be, a guy that can find him no matter where he is on the field and can get the damn ball to him.
I think one of the best ways to sum up Jimmy Garoppolo is he's the poor man's Tom Brady who has a gunslinger mentality of Brett Favre. Because he's a poor man's version of Tom Brady, tries to emulate him, copied his throwing motion. He has a lot of similarities to Tom Brady. He's just not as good at it as Tom Brady. And then he has this penchant for, I'm not bailing on the play. I won't throw it away. I'm going to force it in there and see what happens. And that's the Brett Favre mentality and why Brett Favre has more interceptions than anybody in history.
Yeah, but I mean, slight difference there. He also did some good stuff. And that's what I keep saying. you know, it doesn't matter if Trey Lance throws 15 interceptions next year if he throws 35 touchdowns. So that's going to be the thing for me, is not just going to be flat out, like we've talked about, the straight up number of interceptions. It's what else is he doing to help the team? All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get to some rankings that have kind of driven me nuts, which is a peak offseason story, I realize. And also, you and I are going to have it out a little bit, because we were going back and forth on something that happened this week, and I'm stunned at your reaction. We'll get to that when we come back. Back here on the Niners Nation podcast, the Gold Standard podcast, to be more specific. All right, Levin. It's the offseason, as we know, and one of the favorite things for everybody in this business to do in the offseason is rank things. We're going to rank players, we're going to rank teams, we're going to rank units, we're going to rank rosters. There was a lot of talk when Pro Football Focus did not put the 49ers in their top 10 rosters. We thought that was sort of an insult. And now CBS Sports has ranked the rosters, and they have the 49ers at 18th, which is stunning to me, which is CBS saying the 49ers have a below average NFL roster, and they got to be a bunch of day drinkers over there at CBS. What are they doing?
They're doing something to get a reaction, because nobody talks about CBS Sports. And then think about it. Nobody talks about CBS Sports. You watch their NFL games and they're the boring pregame. You know, there's a reason why the Fox pregame is more popular. This is the type of thing that gets under my skin. You're making shit up to get a reaction. You're telling me a team that was one of the last four alive in the playoffs, one of the last four teams standing, that made it there with a average quarterback who is throwing with half an arm. That's the team that's 18th best. A team that had such a good supporting cast that they were able to make the NFC Championship game with an average quarterback who was playing like a garbage quarterback because his arm was falling off and needed surgery on his throwing shoulder. Shoulder. So, yeah. Make it make sense, because the Niners have pretty much the entire roster back plus Ward. You know, they addressed their biggest need and went out and signed a true number one corner. Now, yes, they lost Tark, but I think you can easily argue the secondary is better upgrading to Ward, and if it's a downgrade, downgrading to Hufanga. So you have a better supporting cast, and somehow the team that was one of the last four alive is 18th best supporting cast. Yeah, doesn't make sense. There's literally no logical argument for it.
If you are wondering...
Oh, and by the way, CBS Sports and all the others, put a damn name on it. Who made the list? If you're going to make a list, have the balls to say who made it.
I don't even understand. Like, here's what they wrote for the 49ers for the blurb. What does Trey Lance have to offer? That's the big question. Assuming Kyle Shanahan actually follows through with his plans to turn the quarterback keys over to his athletic but unpolished investment and part ways with the serviceable but creaky Jimmy Garoppolo. And what about Deebo Samuel, Shanahan's top weapon on out wide and on the run? If he stays, the offense is still in decent shape no matter who's throwing the ball. For the trench warriors and short area targets are still elite. The D has different pros and cons, with Nick Bosa and Fred Warner dominating in the front seven, but the secondary once again looking to outside help for consistency. I mean, none of that. That's just a list of who's on the team, and it's the best secondary that Kyle Shanahan has ever had. And by the way, last year the defense was pretty damn good with a worse secondary. So yeah, just the whole list is ridiculous.
I got two things from that. One, once again, they made the playoffs and made the NFC Championship game with a banged up Jimmy Garoppolo. Trey Lance is not going to be worse than a banged up Jimmy Garoppolo. You want to argue that he might be worse than a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo? Fine. I completely disagree. Fine. But you can't tell me he's going to be worse than the quarterback that was playing at the end of the season for the 49ers. So you can't make that argument that that's going to sink them, because it didn't sink them last year. My other reaction to that is, damn you for giving them a click.
Yeah, I did.
Through my head. I will not click that crap. I'm not going to click something to see the reason behind it. Now, if it's just, you know, say somebody had them 11th had him close to the top 10. I might click that to see, okay, did you have a real justification for having him outside the top 10, just outside the top 10? But 18th, I'm not giving you a click. I'm not giving you the whole, what is the whole point of why they had the Niners 18th? Because they know having the Niners 18th, one of the largest fan bases, just about every Niner fan that sees that is clicking to see what the heck are you smoking.
I wanted to at least give it a chance. I didn't want to comment on it without reading it. But as I go through this
thing, you're different than me. You have a full-time job where you're supposed to click things and be informed on that.
They have the Cowboys at 7. Did they not watch the playoff game last year where the 49ers kicked the tar out of the Cowboys? The game was non-competitive until Jimmy Garoppolo threw an interception that let the Cowboys back in the game. Like, the 49ers dominated them. And oh, by the way, the Cowboys lost Amari Cooper. Michael Gallup is recovering from an ACL injury. Like, the Cowboys got worse this offseason and the 49ers got better. Yet somehow the Cowboys are at 7-7. Like, okay, I'm all done. I'm not going to spend any more time talking about that. I think that's all we need to know about the CBS list. The other thing that I saw that I was reading that jumped out to me was Jeremy Fowler of ESPN is doing a series of articles ranking different position groups in the NFL. He's talking to a bunch of different general managers, you know, getting opinions, and people are voting and all that stuff. He started with edge rushers. And of course, you know, if anybody's going to do a list of edge rushers, I always want to see where they put Nick Bosa. He had Nick Bosa at number 3. The highest ranking Nick Bosa got from the people Fowler talked to was 2. The lowest ranking Nick Bosa got was 10, which I don't know what GM thought that Nick Bosa was the 10th best edge rusher in the league. Maybe it was Trent Baalke. I don't know. That's the only
one
I
tweeted
think of.
Or texted you when you sent me that. I was like, I have a suspicion that's Trent Baalke just being a bitter, poor evaluator of talent.
They had TJ Watt, I believe, was number 1 on the list. Number 2 was Myles Garrett. They had Bosa at 3. I don't really disagree with that. I think that's pretty good.
This is the way to put this argument. Is Nick Bosa better than TJ Watt or Myles Garrett? He might be in reality. Are you able to truly say that without just pretty much having your bias being the reason? No. Myles Garrett and TJ Watt have accomplished more. They have not had the history Bosa has. I mean, Bosa had a really, really, really good year, rookie year. And then he had this past year where he was truly dominant full on. Those other guys have multiple years of it. I don't see how those are pretty much a toss up, I think, between the three in terms of true talent. And the other two have much more accomplished resumes. Like, I just don't. The only way your argument for Nick Bosa being better than either one of them, it's, well, I just think he's better.
You know, I think he could have a better year this year than either one, but I don't think you can say right now that he's better than either one. I mean, TJ Watt tied the single season sack record, and he didn't even play a full season. He didn't even play 16 full games. He only played in 15 games and he had 22 and a half sacks. That's absurd.
Yeah. And then Myles Garrett is as much of a freak as Nick Bosa is. I would argue Myles Garrett is more of an athletic freak than Nick Bosa because he is a little bit more athletic. Now, Bosa has the better technique, but Myles Garrett is truly a one of a kind, never been seen before athlete. He is crazy huge, crazy muscular, and yet as athletic as a pass rushing linebacker in a 3-4 scheme. It's absurd what he is.
He is, like, there are certain people that play in the NFL that are just scary looking human beings. Myles Garrett is one. He's 6'4".
Yeah, he's a scary looking human being, and he wields a helmet sometimes.
Right, and he'll try and murder you on the field, literally. He's 6'4", 270 pounds. You pointed out he's absolutely shredded. Now, granted, Nick Bosa is listed at 6'4", 266, which is also pretty impressive, but I feel like 180 of those pounds are in Nick Bosa's quads. But Myles Garrett is a freakish dude. I've said that I think we could be seeing, like, that we have already seen the worst Nick Bosa we're going to see, and that he could, you know, ascend to incredible heights this year. He may have a better year than Watt and Garrett this year, but I think three on this list was a lot better, you know, a lot more arguable than the 49ers being 18 at CBS Sports list.
I mean, there was a graph. I think you shared it with me recently. I'd already seen it, but I think you sent it to me today. But there's a graph that shows the double team rate for pass rushers, as well as their actual pass rush win rate. Nick Bosa was the highest double teamed pass rusher in the league. He gets double teamed more than those other guys. If the Niners can get a true edge rusher on the other side that's reliable and consistent, like D Ford was supposed to be, you're not going to be able to do that. And if you don't double team Nick Bosa, he's going to make a run at the sack record. And he's going to have a higher percentage win rate. His percentage win rate, I think, was like third or fourth. It wasn't quite at the top. But he's going to win more if he's double teamed less. So I think that's the key with the 49ers draft this year. They can get that other side to be a true threat, and they can get Kinlaw to be playing like the first round pick that he was. Nick Bosa is going to get freed up a lot. You're not going to be able to double team him. And at some point, when you're not double teaming him, the only other option you have is holding him. You would think at some point the referees will start calling it.
So Bosa finished this year, he was double teamed 26% of the time, and his pass rush win rate was eighth. So nobody was double teamed more than Nick Bosa, I believe. And his pass rush win rate was eighth in the league, which is just incredible. To be honest with you, like, I'm sort of amazed that Nick Bosa wasn't double teamed 74% of the time. I thought 26% was low. Wouldn't you double him every time?
I'm curious how that double team rate works. Does it work if a tight end is one of the doubles?
I don't know.
Or is it only when you're doubled by two offensive linemen? I don't know either.
What if you chip them? You know, like,
well,
I'm
if
way
you
out,
chip,
yeah,
that doesn't count. I know that one doesn't count. But so I'm curious if you have the tight end play on his side, and along with the left tackle, double team him. Does that count as a true double team because it's not an offensive lineman being part of the double team? I don't know. I would be curious, because it seems like a lot of the times Nick Bosa is getting that tight end to mess with him, whether it's a chip or a full-on engaging. So if that doesn't count, that would explain why it certainly feels like he's double-teamed more, but it doesn't show on that, despite still being the most double-teamed player in the league.
He's just a game wrecker. It's just so nice to have a pass rusher like that, because in my lifetime, 49ers haven't really had that. I mean, Bryant Young was a great player and could rush the passer, but he was a defensive tackle. I'm trying to think of, like, I mean, they had Alden Smith, but it was like a 2-year thing. And then that was it. It was over. Justin Smith was really good, but he wasn't a take over the game kind of player. Like, Nick Bosa affects every snap of the other team's game plan. And in my lifetime, the 49ers have not had that for any extended period of time.
I would say Justin Smith was close, but he played on the interior and he didn't quite have enough speed. There were plenty of times that Cowboy was destroying the play, but the quarterback was able to get rid of it, so it didn't go down as a sack. And that's why his sack numbers weren't crazy high. And I feel like we've talked about that. Nick Bosa is not a speed freak, but he has just enough that you're not going to get away from him. You know, if Nick Bosa was a step slower, he wouldn't get nearly as many sacks because the quarterbacks would be able to get away from him.
Justin Smith never had a double-digit sack season in his career. But I agree with you, that doesn't tell the whole story. To me, he didn't affect the game as much as Bosa does. And the other thing with Bosa is his motor. He's just fast enough, like you said, and he's all over the field. He runs down plays from behind, running plays from behind. It's freaking amazing to watch. One of my favorite players on the 49ers. All right, last thing before we go. Got a bone to pick with you, Levin. We all saw the Deebo Samuel autograph gate this week, where he had a football camp, and there was that video that somebody tweeted out where a little kid asked him to sign a football. He says no, and everybody piles on Deebo Samuel. Oh, what a jerk, blah, 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 including you, Now, I want to be fair to you because you commented on it before we found out that every kid that went to the camp got a signed photo of Debo. So I want to give you a chance to retract your statement because you were kind of throwing him under the bus a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of half take it back is where I fall. I did not know at the time, and we didn't know for a few hours after. And, you know, I guess you can say shame on me for reacting before getting all the facts. But, you know, it's Twitter, and I'm bored, and I reacted. but, yeah, we found out that it's actually part of the rules in camp that he can't. Now, that tells me that it's likely tied to him getting paid. The deal he has with that camp is you can't do that because we're trying to sell that stuff. And so that's part of his pay agreement, his contract for that. That's what it seemed like it came off to me when he posted that it was part of the rules. And then it also came out that this particular father is not a very good father, at least on that day, because he sent his kid up repeatedly. And supposedly it was the fifth time that he finally recorded it, knowing full well what the answer was going to be. So almost staged. So yes, I do think that changes things. But I definitely am still very strongly in the, I don't care what the heck you're doing. There are very few circumstances where you don't take the freaking 2 seconds to sign a kid's autograph.
Well, I didn't know that other additional stuff that it had been five times by the same person.
That's what's been thrown out there, that the dad kept sending them up throughout the day and then recorded that one.
I take issue with just that 2 second, 10 second interaction gets recorded and thrown out there and people comment on it, you and other people. And I can't stand it because it's not fair to judge anybody on a 10 second snapshot. What if Debo had just signed 80 million autographs the previous 3 hours? Now he has to sign one more.
Yeah.
Or, and by the way, he doesn't have to sign any in his whole life if he doesn't want to. Like, and I get that it's a kid. I get that. But it drives me nuts when people do that. Just, like, the only reason to tweet that out is to shit on Debo. And that just drives me crazy. You don't have nearly enough information to comment on the situation one way or another. And the whole thing, it's a nerve for me in general, not just with Debo, but with anybody.
So I think we have a key disagreement here. One, when it's a kid, sign the damn thing. Now, if this was, like I said, if it's a contractual thing, he can't. But you can say somebody doesn't ever have to sign one. And yeah, technically, legally speaking, they don't. But I will judge you for that. Like, you don't have to. But if you never sign autographs because you're just a selfish prick, I'm going to call you a selfish prick. It is a privilege, in my opinion. You worked your ass off to get it, but don't forget where you came from. Don't forget what it was like to be that little kid and how you would have been if you got an autograph from somebody you looked up to. So to me, sign the damn thing. Now, this is, like I said, a different situation, and I didn't know that, and I shouldn't have tweeted it out so quickly without getting the info. But yeah, like, if, put it this way, if Debo Samuel's walking down the street and a kid comes up and says, can you sign this? Yeah, you better be signing it or I'm going to judge you for it.
I mean, what if Debo Samuel 2 minutes earlier had gotten a call? Hey, your cousin was just in a car accident and he's in the hospital and he doesn't feel like signing something at that particular moment. He doesn't have to. And he doesn't have to explain that to people if he doesn't sign. Leave him alone. Let him live his life. I get what you're saying. Like, you would like to think that you could take the time to sign for a kid, but if he doesn't, he doesn't. Like, I don't know. I don't judge him for it or anybody. I get why it bothers people, but I don't know. I just think you've got to look at these athletes like real people with other stuff going on in their life and not just take that moment in a vacuum.
To me, it's just one of the things. I mean, we all have instances in our life where we know we need to do something so that we're not a complete jerk, even when we're really not in the mood to do it. And when you make lots of money, you live a public life, you made it, and you can literally change somebody's life by signing that. And that doesn't mean it changes every kid's life, But some kids are truly that will be a moment in their life that ends up shaping them. To me, you take the 2 seconds. I don't care what's going on in your life. Take the 2 seconds. You don't even have to think. A signature, you don't have to think about. Sign it and walk away. Now, there are certain instances, like I said, like, yeah, if you're in a wedding and somebody runs up and barges into the wedding and says, hey, can you sign this? Yeah, that's one of those instances where you say, kick rocks, get out of my face. You know, there are certain times. If you, in my opinion, if you spend a lot of money to go to like a fancy restaurant to get privacy, to get away from all of that, to me, I think it's out of line to go ask for an interview. You know, if you're sitting at $1,000 plate, there's a reason.
Autograph.
There's a reason why he's paying $1,000 for that food, and it's not because it tastes that much better. It's because of the privacy it affords that celebrity. And that goes for actors and everybody. You know, I think there's certain instances. Now, if he's just in line at a McDonald's, you're going into a public place and you know darn well there's going to be, you know, Joe Schmo around that's going to be a big
sports fan. But everywhere outside of his house is public. Like, he shouldn't have to spend $1,000 just to go out and not get asked for autographs. Like,
that's what public life is. That's what, when you choose to go into acting, when you choose to go into anything that makes you a celebrity, when you choose to go into politics, that is what you sacrifice. I literally I'm not tooting my own horn because I was never famous, but they literally talk about that if you're going to be a journalist, you are in the public sphere. You live a public life. People will know you, know your name, who you are. And it is different. And the laws in a lot of states actually are written differently. You have less protections and rights if you live a public life. If you are considered to be in a profession that is in a public life, you actually do have different laws that either apply to you or don't apply to you that regular people don't.
Right. Like the standard for, what is it? Libel?
Yes. Libel.
You gotta prove act.
Yeah, you get less protections if you're a public figure. You know, if I go out there and say something publicly or make a claim that gets picked up by a newspaper article about, you know, some stay-at-home mom, it's going to be pretty easy to come after me. If I go out there and state something that, I mean, we see it all the time in politics, even to a degree in sports, you're saying something that isn't true, but because that person lives in a public life, there is a law there that you are allowed to, you can't maliciously do it. I mean, we just heard about all this if you paid attention to the Johnny Depp trial. You have to prove malicious intent because it's a public life.
I just think, I get why people ask him, but if he doesn't want to sign, he doesn't want to sign. There could be a million reasons for it, and that's just tough. Sorry, kid. Deal with it. You already got your signed photo for being a member of the camp anyway. So, I don't know. Get off Debo's back, people. It's not a bad look for the Niners. It's just he didn't want to sign an autograph. That's all it is. And if that happened in the middle of October, we wouldn't even be talking about it. But because it happened 2 weeks or 3 weeks before training camp starts, it becomes a thing.
The story of the last 6 months for Debo is him not wanting to sign something, both contract and autograph. He does not want to sign his name to something.
that's what's left, though, right? Before the season starts, it's the Jimmy Garoppolo resolution and the Debo Samuel contract. Those are the only two things that have to get done before training camp starts, I believe, July 26th.
I don't know when I'm going to truly start sweating about that contract. I know Fred Warner got his on July 21st, I believe. But Kittle didn't get his until training camp. His was in August that he finally signed his extension. So, I don't know. If he reports to training camp, I won't be sweating at all. But if the reports are he's not going to show up to training camp and we get within a week of training camp, that's probably when I'm going to start sweating. Right now, it's not even something I think about all that often.
We will be here. We will see. Hopefully it all gets done. Jimmy is gone. Debo is signed. Life is good going into training camp 2022. That's going to do it for this edition of the Gold Standard Podcast. Again, please keep your ratings and your reviews coming. Make sure you follow the Niners Nation Podcast Network.
help us get that star rating up. We really, really do appreciate it. And as you heard, we will read it on the show. Well, Evan, I hope you have a terrible week.
Thank you.
What happened with your internet situation? You had to call Verizon and get them to come out and put a new line. Did you have to, crack some skulls there to get what you wanted?
Well, they came out the next day and ran a temporary line. So it was just above ground, and lying on the ground going across my yard, which is awesome because it's fiber optic, so it's glass. So luckily that held up, and they just dug the new line today, and it's not hooked up because they got to wait on somebody that can do the hookup. The digger's different than the hookup person. So I'm still running off the one that's just on the ground. It hasn't been a huge issue because I got it back and we haven't had issues since, but that whole digging thing, I wanted to wring somebody's neck over because they came and they marked. One, I was home. You could knock on my damn door. Let me know you're there. But they came and marked their proposed path because they all have like codes, like a red flag signifies something, a orange flag when you do 811 signifies another thing, blah, blah, blah. They had white paint on the ground. I knew that signified that's the proposed path for digging. And I don't want to get in too many details, but I have an easement for my driveway because my house is set back behind my neighbor's. My neighbor mows that, even though it's technically my land because I have 3 feet to the side of my driveway. They wanted to dig through that. It's like, no, you got no reason to go through my neighbor's yard, even though it's technically my land. And then they had the white paint going right through my big flower bed. It's like, oh, you're going to put a fiber optic line 4 inches underneath a flower bed, where you pretty regularly dig more than 4 inches to put in flowers? No. So I kept calling and they were like, they're supposed to call you back in 4 hours, but sometimes it takes 24. Oh, okay.
Think about that. We'll call you back in 4 hours unless it takes five times as long.
Six, but yes. they didn't call. So I called the next day when it hit 24 hours and they said, we're sorry about that. They'll call you by tomorrow. They didn't call. Holiday weekend. They didn't call yesterday. And they showed up today to dig. And I was at work. And my wife had to go out and go, no, you're not going that way. Go this way. And luckily, the digger was like, okay, sure. But they had told me on the phone that they're not allowed to dig without the white line being drawn. So yeah, I don't know if they broke the rules today or if that was a fib. But yeah,
shout out to Mrs. Black laying down the law. I don't know if your wife is Mrs. Black or not, but that's what I went with.
You think she marries a guy with that awesome of a last name? She doesn't take it.
Oh, God, there's a line.
It's, it's endless, endless awesome jokes with that last name.
There's a line from 30 Rock that I'm thinking of, but I don't want to say because if I don't nail it perfectly, it just comes off as very, very bad and a joke in very poor taste, so I'm not going to say.
That's good, because I don't think humor is your strong suit. Except for, funny looking, but that's hold on.
That's a way to end the show. It's a way. I guess that's what we're going with this week. Enjoy your Thursday, everybody.